Another 9 a.m., May 29th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm like, I'm struggling this morning. I'm like a little out of breath. I feel like I just ran up the stairs.
You probably did.
I think I'm excited about our guest. I think that's what's going on. I think I'm just so excited to have Peggy here that I'm out of breath. I'm going to tell you. So on that note, I guess we should introduce our guest because
we should get everyone else
as excited as we are.
Why we're so excited about today's show.
That's right. We have Peggy Stoll Johnson in the studio today. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're like a regular here now.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, we love having you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very good energy.
Thank you.
You have a very long bio. So so I think plenty of people probably know your name just from your music school.
Maybe. Hopefully.
I think so. Because I think the first time I knew you were coming in, I was like, oh, I know that name, without really knowing any of your background. But you started your music schools in when? The 80s?
In the 80s, 1988. Yeah, yeah.
And so you were a musician growing up.
Yes.
And last time, of course, when you were here, we had your parents here too, which was fun.
Was that not adorable?
That was insanely adorable.
Yeah, they were here visiting from California, and they just loved it. They loved you guys. They loved being here. Yeah.
And that was really great. So anyway, so you were always a musician. You started your music schools in the 80s, sold them a couple years ago, yes?
Yep.
Which is like a huge business success.
I feel, I feel like it was bittersweet.
Yeah.
And they're still in existence.
Yeah.
And it was.
Well, and now that it's like the 80s was sadly for us a long time ago. And so. So you have students.
Although
now.
I remember it so well, and
I know.
It seems like yesterday. But to me, which is sad, shows how old I am.
I know, but at least we're not wearing the acid wash jeans anymore.
That's true, and my hair is not huge.
That's right, me too. Through lots of treatments, my hair has gotten smaller, which is a good thing.
Smaller and shorter. Yeah.
That's right. But you have like legions of students now who are in their 20s who went through your schools and, you know, probably attribute a lot of their musical ability and love of music to you. So that's pretty cool.
I feel that way. I feel that, you know, that we have taught, you know, so many people in Atlanta who have gone on to be professional musicians all over the country and actually over the world, and who have gone on to some of the finest universities in the country. A lot of them feed into Georgia State University, which I'm proud of since that's my alma mater and I'm on the board for the School of Music there. But you know, many of them gone to Florida State, Indiana University, Berkeley, you know, New England Conservatory, so many wonderful schools, and we're very, very proud of that. And,
yeah.
And many of the musicians in town performing and doing a lot of work have gone through our program. And so I was very proud to build the program, which grew to, you know, three locations and yet still have a really fine reputation of quality education.
Yeah. Yeah, that I mean, that is really a cool legacy that you have. So,
thank you.
Yeah,
thank
no, that's really cool. And you have a lot of other great stuff on your bio, which we are going to get to. Leadership Atlanta, Callenwald, your casting, and there's a million things.
Thank you.
But
thank you.
Before we get to all that,
yes,
we have to do our usual rundown of what's going on here in town.
What's the beat?
Yeah, what's on the news beat? Well, there's a couple things I want to talk about this week. First of all, I'm sure you guys have heard that we now have been approved to have a giant Ferris wheel downtown.
This is very exciting stuff. Like the eye of Atlanta.
Yes.
Wow.
People look surprised. Yeah.
So, I saw it. I just...
I
don't know anything about it.
Is this one of those things where you report a story and then it doesn't really come true? Because I really hope that we get this.
No, you know, it's funny because we do. A lot of times there'll be a story like this, like something, we may get something and then it never happens. But in this case, it's saying it's approved. So I think that means it's going to happen. And what I'm understanding is that this is the one part of the story I don't know. And that is whether or not it's permanent. I don't know if it comes here and it stays here, kind of like the London Eye. Or if it's short term, I haven't quite figured that out from the news stories I've read, but apparently this thing started. It's going to be called Skyview Atlanta, and it's going to be right near here. Actually, we're at 200 Peachtree Street downtown for the listening audience, and it's going to be, I think, kind of near where the Tabernacle is. So it's very close to here, a couple blocks away.
Okay. Okay.
Near Centennial Olympic Park.
Okay. In that, okay.
Yeah, I think.
That'd be the perfect place for it.
Yeah, I'll come back and confirm all this for you, but because right now I'm maybe just contributing to hearsay. It's unclear. However, it was initially in Paris. This exact Ferris wheel was in Paris. Later, it was moved to Pensacola, and now it's waiting in Pennsylvania for its next location. And that's why I'm unclear if it's permanent, since it's moved already a few times.
Okay.
However, I am wondering. So here's the thing. Have you been to London, Peggy?
I have not been to Italy, but not London.
Okay. Elizabeth, London?
Yes, I've been to the London Eye, and I've also been to the Manchester Eye.
Okay. So I've been to the London
and
Eye.
And the Singapore Eye.
Okay. All right. So you're all about the eyes. You get the eyes.
I mean, if it's there and you're a tourist,
you're gonna
it kind of goes on the list.
Okay. But here's my question. And I love Atlanta, so don't get me wrong. But when you go up in the London Eye, you're looking at beautiful, the Thames, water, you know, gorgeous centuries-old buildings. I don't know what you're looking at here. I'm a little concerned that you're looking at, like, the stadium and some smog and 75-85. So I'm not so sure. I don't know.
Can you see the skyline from there?
I guess.
Hopefully.
I hope so. I'm concerned.
Right. You might be able to see the skyline like all the way up north.
It might be about the skyline and the trees.
And just the experience of being up high and, you know, people like a Ferris wheel even in the middle of nowhere. So let's start with that. But I'm a little like, I'm just, my eyebrow is raised a teensy bit on what this is going to be for.
I haven't been to the Eye, so I can imagine the difference.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
It's just something fun to do in downtown and, you know, adding to that whole area now, which has become like this
very tourist.
Booming. Right.
Well, and that I can appreciate. If you go down and you go to the aquarium and, you know, you visit the World of Coke and then maybe you hop on the Ferris wheel. So, and you take the, and now you'll be able to take the streetcar around.
Right.
And you
go
know.
To the College Football Hall of Fame, which is opening next year.
Yeah.
And the National Civil Rights Museum.
Yeah. So
all of that.
Now, does the revenue go to Atlanta at all?
That's a good question. I don't know from the story I read who gets the money. I would imagine the city has some part of it, but I don't know if it's privately operated or how that works. I guess
that
we'll
was my big question. Who's putting up the bucks for this?
Yeah.
Because the city council approval is one thing, but the financing
is another.
Sort of
sure.
The key piece.
Though I'm quite sure it'll be $25 or something to ride it. I mean, I don't know. I made that number up, but I'm sure it'll be expensive to ride. This is not news, people.
Is it expensive in London to ride?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but it's.
Yeah, because they're those fans. It's not like, you know, the rickety Ferris wheel that you got on at the state fair.
No, it's
like,
a big
it's like those
glass
enclosed
room.
Rooms.
Bubble.
And
yeah.
I think, you know, the fancy ones, you can have like a champagne dinner inside there.
Yeah.
For yeah, the VIP ticket.
Like each car fits 20 or each thing fits like 20 people. I don't know if this one's like that or not, but the one in London, 10 or 20 people or whatever get in each car and it's enclosed and. Because you'd be really scared if you were not enclosed that high up. I would not do that. Anyway, yeah, it's pricey. So we'll see. However, I want to say also that as my
That's definitely an upgrade from that little fair that's like on the side of the highway.
Well, that's
the stadium.
Well, okay.
That's really the only Ferris wheel scene.
So that's what, when you said the Ferris wheel, I was like, is that what you're talking about? And I was like, I saw it. Don't really know if this is what the story is about.
That thing always lights up like right at the beginning of summer. And you're like,
what is
Thanks
that?
For bringing that up. I wasn't going to bring that up. I was like, is that what she's talking about? Okay.
Now this is like a fancier thing.
And that sounds really cool.
We'll see what happens. But the other thing that's kind of interesting about it is, according to the story I read, it is very possibly, going to be here as early as next month. So we'll see if this story comes true. I mean, you know.
Well, hopefully it will be successful and hopefully it will bring some revenue to Atlanta.
And class. Like, we never want to have something here that's going to be junky. That's always what I'm a little afraid of. Like, you know, when they say we're like the streetcar is going to be awesome. It's
because
really well
it's
done.
Top end, right. They've done all this research.
Right. I think, you know, it's going to really be a positive thing for the city. But whenever they talk about some new attraction, you always have to remember when Underground first came.
Yes.
And it was going to be the savior of downtown. And then it turned into like junky McJunkenburg. I mean, nobody wanted to go there. It was awful. So we don't want that. So that's always, right. I always have a tiny bit of concern that something's going to sort of, that has good intentions is going to sort of turn junky. So anyway.
Well, how could anything coming from Paris be junky?
Well, that. Actually,
that's true.
Yeah, that actually works in its favor.
I can't wait to see it.
And I'm sure when the Eiffel Tower first went up, people thought, like, what is this nonsense?
Well, they did.
Yeah, right?
They absolutely did.
Yeah. Like, what is this? What is
now,
the point of
now
this?
Now they're very proud of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was because that was a World's Fair kind of thing.
Yes,
it went up for
absolutely.
That, yeah.
And it was supposed to be taken down and it never,
never did. Yeah.
Was.
And now it's like what you think of when you think of Paris. So we'll take our Ferris wheel and see what happens. Okay. Also, Atlanta and Decatur both have issued requests for proposals for bike share programs. So we're kind of moving up in the world as cities go, which is kind of cool. You know, they have them in New York. They have them in Boston. They have them in a lot of major metropolitan areas now where you can walk up to a little stand, put your credit card in, grab a bike, and drop it off at another location.
How do I not know about this?
It's very cool. It's a really cool
really
thing.
Cool.
Yeah. It's a really cool thing. And it's just started cropping up, I think, in the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. It probably started in San Francisco because all stuff like this, although it's so hilly there, but all stuff like this starts, you know, very green, very healthy, affordable way to get around.
And fun.
And fun. And I've seen them in Boston. My daughter goes to college in Boston and I've seen them there. And it does look like a pretty cool thing. There are also... there obviously are multiple companies that do it, which is why they're doing a request for a proposal. And they're all very clean and sort of they look new and nice the way places where you pick them up. They're not rickety or, you know, they sort of find street corners to put them on that are centrally located. And it's pretty cool. So I think it'll be cool if we get that.
And I think it's a great idea. You know, when you go to the beach, the first thing you want to do is rent a bike,
yeah.
You know, and why not do that in the city?
Yeah. But the really cool thing is it's a commuter thing, so you don't have to return it to where you got it. That's what's really cool.
That's good.
It's like you can get it near your – somebody like Elizabeth, who has a great in-town living location, could probably pick one up somewhere around Little Five Points where she is, ride it over here, and drop it off. So you're not having to pay for the hours where you're sitting at your office. And then at the end of the day, you go grab another one, ride it back home, and drop it off over there.
Absolutely.
Elizabeth's like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
No, I would totally do that.
But
it does require
there.
A little bit of planning. But I guess, yeah, between, you know, your bike share and your Breeze card, you could
make it work.
Right.
Yeah, because on a rainy day, I'm quite sure they don't do as well with the bikes, you know. And also if you're in a
and
suit
that is
or
a,
whatever.
A consideration here in the ATL.
Yeah. They're good for college students though. They're awesome for college students too because they don't care as much. Like they don't have to show up looking all we have to show up sometimes, you know, looking professional. We can't be sweaty with like bike grease stains right. on us and stuff, you know. But college students, you know, they can just grab it from their dorm and ride over to wherever and it's a good idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the way that the city is evolving, more in-town living and young people taking public transportation, zip carring, biking around.
The Beltline, you know, it's all of it coming together, you know.
Yeah.
With the Beltline, I mean, it really does become, because now you've got like a commute way in town.
Yeah.
To get like
from
around.
Here to there.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
And with a bike especially. Like it's meant for bikes.
Absolutely.
So, and then if you have a bike share, you don't even have to worry about investing in your own if you're only going to do it once in a while or whatever. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny because I
bike
have not,
on.
I got to admit that I
bike on.
Bike on, sisters.
Bike on, Atlanta.
I haven't rode a bike. Rode a bike? Is that how you say that? I haven't ridden a bike.
Ridden a bike. Hmm.
I, because of the Beltline, I've just recently pulled out my bike and started, you know, and because of the broken foot.
Yeah. So can you can ride a bike with your foot?
And you know what? It's just like they say.
You never
comes
forget.
Back to you.
Just like just riding a bike.
Just like riding a bike. Wow.
And probably been 10, 12 years.
I was just going to say, I haven't ridden or rode a bike or whatever in, I can't even tell you, at least that long, probably 15 years, 17 years or something. And I've been tempted, you know, from time to time, but I don't want to invest in my own bike because I'm not sure if I'll really do it. But having a bike share around, I could try it, you know, and see if I like it before I invest anything in my own bike.
Well, parking is so easy when you have a bike.
That's true.
So how much does it cost to rent a bike?
That's a good question. I guess
we'll
have to...
like, what's the over-under on the Ferris wheel ride, or should I rent the bike?
I think the bike is going to be cheaper. If I had to guess, if I were a betting woman, I would bet the bike is going to be cheaper than the Ferris wheel.
Yes.
And I think that's probably why they're doing... Now, I will say this. I do know that the bike shares... I'm pretty sure all the money goes to the company that does the bike share. I don't think the city benefits from that, except for that it's something the city offers.
There's probably a tax.
There may be a tax for the locations or whatever, however they do it. But I think the
and
bulk,
a permit.
Yes, they have to permit. I'm quite sure they
and a
have
license.
To,
so I think we benefit somehow.
Like all businesses, right? Yeah, for sure. But I think that in terms of the amount you're paying every time you rent, it's a private company and they're making money and that's what they do. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see it. So we'll keep our eyes out and we'll keep you posted as that story continues. Meanwhile, also new zoning, kind of on the same subject, because we've been talking about the streetcar for probably almost a year now. Don't you think?
Yeah.
It's been that long. And of course, we're anybody who drives through downtown, you can't help but see all the construction that's going on. And that's what it's for. It's to move utilities around and whatnot so the streetcar can come through. But also now they're talking about some new zoning in the MLK Historic District, which should help spark some investment in new building and all of that. I mean, obviously that's an area where they want to be very careful not to disturb the historic important mm-hmm. stuff, and they want to preserve the feel of the neighborhood and all those kinds of things. However, there are some empty lots and some places where they could use sort of some new life, and it looks like that's going to happen. So that is exciting.
Right, even talk of a boutique hotel.
Yes.
Definitely would add a nice element to that area.
It's a typical development story, right? Because the streetcar is going to go right by there. So now a hotel's like, oh, all right. Well, if the streetcar is going to be here, then we can be here because anyone that stays knows they can get to all of the downtown attractions.
Excellent.
You know, and be right here where this, you know, by the Sweet Auburn Market and where the MLK, you know, memorials are and all of that kind of stuff. So pretty cool.
What a great show this is. You're talking about such wonderful things.
Well, we love to keep people kind of abreast of what's going on here in Atlanta because there's really not any other show that does that. So we take it on ourselves. But I have to always preface it by like, we guess about a lot of stuff. So don't, this is good water cooler conversation for you, but I wouldn't invest any money based on what we say. Just saying. That's our disclaimer. Right, Elizabeth?
Right.
Okay. Excellent.
That's why we bring the guests on, because they actually know something.
They might actually be able to correct us.
Like, you know, they have the connection.
Right.
They know
hopefully.
What's really going on.
Well, we have Central Atlanta Progress comes on the show quite a bit, and Dan Williams will always, these would have been better stories for when Dan was here, because he can tell us the details. Like, he could tell us what the Ferris wheel would cost or if it's really happening. So I'll have to double check with him. I think he'll be back.
He's probably calling us right now.
Right. He's probably ringing the phone. Girls? Ladies? No. All right. We did talk about this story many moons ago, and I just want to bring it back up because it has come full circle, and that is that Dante's Down the Hatch in Buckhead is gone.
What?
Yeah. This story's been going on for probably a year or two. What happened was the owner, Dante, that's his actual name, he's been there for 20-some-odd years or 30 years or whatever it's been. He's actually been inducted into some, you know, Hall of Fame.
The ACBB Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's really contributed to Atlanta and all of that. I think the restaurant closes sometime in the next month or two. There's a sign, actually, if you drive by now that says the closing date. But part of the reason is because of everything that built up around him, the government started assessing his property at being worth something like $5.5 million. And so he was having to pay property tax on something he bought for nothing.
Because of the hotel next door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now he had to kind of give up. He tried to fight it for quite some time and he couldn't win. And so now a development company has bought that land and they're going to be putting up an apartment tower, and a landmark Atlanta restaurant will be saying goodbye.
Well, like, we need another apartment tower.
That's true. There's a lot of apartments going up. And it's interesting because, and I want to get a real estate expert in here. I think we will do that just to talk about apartments versus condos. Why, you know, and where are all the people going to come from to fill all these apartments that are going up like gangbusters right now all over town?
Well, a lot of people are hesitant to buy. My husband's in real estate. So a lot of people are hesitant to buy real estate because of the economy.
Yeah.
So they want to rent.
People that got burned in the most recent bust.
Or they can't because they got burned.
Right.
You know,
or
their credits.
That's right. Or they're not able to, or they're not sure, you know, they're moving here from another state. They're not sure they want to stay. They're just checking it out.
But it did seem like before the bust, there were, you know, whenever you saw buildings going up, they were condos. And now you see the economy starting to recover. You see more cranes in action, you know, more building in action, which is great.
A lot of those projects that had been abandoned are now starting up.
But it's all apartments, which I just find really interesting.
Yeah.
And partly, I think, because the condo market still has a ways to come before it recovers. I mean, there's just so many people that did buy high and are stuck with these properties now. So
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of years ago, we were all like buying the penthouse, right. You know, leasing the car. Now right. We're biking around, right. Renting an apartment.
Downsizing. Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of baby boomers, you know, people or empty nesters who their kids are going off to college, they're getting married. And so they want to sell the big house and kind of move in town.
Yeah. Well, in fact, it's funny because that is literally what I did when my daughter left for college. I sold my house and I rented. I moved into an apartment. I pocketed the money from my house and I rented because I didn't know what I wanted to do next and all of that. So no complaints that there are rentals available, but I just find it kind of an interesting change in the market. All right. Last headline I want to hit before we get back to focusing all of our attention on Peggy.
Oh.
Is that everyone knows who listens to the show that I'm a big fan of doing lists. And today I kind of I usually have funny lists, but today it's a little more serious. Metro Atlanta has the 6th largest information sector. So that's pretty cool.
This is a good claim to fame. Absolutely.
In other words, Silicon Valley is still number one. I think San Francisco number two. I'm not going to read the whole list, but there are some cities like Atlanta, now Austin, Texas coming up, New Orleans, believe it or not, because they're more affordable to live. And Atlanta is number 6 out of
really?
The whole country, which is pretty cool. People are looking at Atlanta as a place where there is a bevy of talent.
Absolutely, especially with technical skills.
Correct.
I mean, we've talked a lot about the high tech industry and being big here in Atlanta, and information jobs are kind of synergistic with that. So it does fall in line with building off of, you know, the great schools that are here and the amazing talent and all those people wanting to move into those apartments.
That's right. Well, but it's funny that you say that because there were several other stories that I bypassed in terms of actually getting into discussions on today. But there was one about Hitachi adding 250 jobs here in Atlanta. And there are stories like that right now every week where companies are coming in. GM, I think, just brought a bunch of jobs here. And I think that's happening very frequently right now. And it is a lot of people that are going to be wanting to rent apartments. It's probably true.
Well, they are forecasting all of that. So I'm sure that's a big part of it, too.
Yeah,
But and our affordability of the air. Exactly.
Well, the airport system, that's really what brings the business, brings the jobs, is that it's so easy to get in and out of Atlanta.
It is. And we need to fix the traffic problem, but maybe if everyone starts biking, we'll be good to go. But it's still very affordable to live here, all things considered. As you said, the airport system is fantastic, and it feeds on itself because you have the high tech. You have people viewing us as a great place for high tech, which means more high tech companies come, which means more young people come who want to work in those industries. And then there's more people to do things like take music classes and raise families here and all of those things, which is only going to help improve the school systems and help improve the roads and help, you know, because more taxes and all that stuff. So it's all very good for our local economy. And I wish Dan was here for that one, too, because good for our reputation. We like it. One of our lists back probably 6 months ago was Atlanta. We were on a list for being one of the dirtiest cities.
Ooh.
Dan didn't like
it. We've also been named the nerdiest city.
Yes.
That was a good one, too.
That was a good one. Dragon Con. Need I say more?
Not cool. Maybe cool. Sorry.
Hey, nerdy is cool now. It's a lot cooler
than
it used to
that's
be
it.
To
that's,
be nerdy.
That's true.
So.
That's true. With tech.
That's right. Right. And tech, you know, bringing it right back to that story. I mean, having tech here is part of what makes us so appealing because you have all those kids coming out of tech looking for jobs. And
when they're not dressed up like characters in a sci-fi movie.
Right. When they're not at Dragon Con.
They can really program the heck out of a computer.
That's absolutely
they are programming
right.
the future for us. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. At Dragon Con.
So speaking about young people, before we went on the air, I was mentioning a little bit to Peggy that one of the things with the creative background that you have, and I know Elizabeth and I both like to embrace our creative sides, you know, it's so interesting because you realize pretty early on, I think, once you get out of college and you start to pursue whatever it is, that even if you're in a creative field, that you have to know business, that you can't think that you're going to just go be creative. I'm going to go be a guitar player or an artist or, you know, an actress or whatever the case may be. You have to know your business. It's one of the interesting things to me about business television and business radio. It all focuses on like the Dow is up, the S&P is down. Like who really cares, right? Except for, and they even say there's a some smaller percentage of the population in the United States, I don't know if it's 50%, that actually invest in stocks. The rest don't and don't care. But everybody should actually care about business, because whether you're a shopper, a consumer, an employee, you know, an owner, you are involved in business in some way or other. So for you to know and understand business, anybody, every citizen basically needs to know and understand. So, but talking about it as it relates to creative field, at what point along the way as a musician did you realize I got to get ahead for business here?
You know, I was young and I didn't know really what I was doing. I just knew what, as far as business, I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew what I wanted to do, and that was start a music school. I had been teaching music for a few years, and I wasn't really happy with any of the locations that I had taught at. I mean, they were fine. They were your typical music store that sold guitars and whatnot. And so I started teaching more at home, and then I didn't really want that many people coming to my home. I had 60 students at the time because I had a daughter, and then I was performing at night. And I just at one point thought, you know what? I want to get it out of my home, and I want to just open up something small where I can go to work and be in an environment that's kind of like my home. And I started out with a small little office space, and I had four teachers working with me, and then it grew from there. Had I gone to business school, it would have been so much better. I went to music school instead. So I learned business through the hard knocks of...
By doing.
And but along the way, I learned about business plans and sales plans and marketing plans and all those things and taxes and all kinds of stuff. And so as I got older and was considered to be successful, since I, you know, didn't go out of business like a lot of my colleagues, then I began to speak at different programs, MBA students, all kinds, you know, even though I didn't have an MBA, I knew quite a bit about business. And, but had I had an MBA or had I gone to business school, who knows, I probably would have been so much better off. I didn't quite answer the question. As far as putting that into a creative field, as a musician, every musician is a business person. You are marketing yourself. And yeah. I learned marketing because there's a lot of musicians out there. So if you want to rise above, you have to separate yourself from the pack. And that is business. And so you have to have people take an interest in you. You have to be able to manage your finances. You have to be able to do all those things that a regular business would do. But a lot of musicians and creative people don't think that way. They think, "Oh, I'm going to learn my craft, and then I'm going to win some competition or get some record deal or be in some film, and then I'm set." That's not the case for most of the creative people. You may be able to earn a living for the rest of your life and never be famous.
Right. It was so interesting. We had on our Results Matter show yesterday, Elizabeth was hosting a couple of guests from Law Jam 2013, which is a concert put on by bands that are it's a fundraiser.
Big fundraiser for the Atlanta Bar Foundation, the charitable arm of the Atlanta Bar Association. Yeah, so we had these attorneys/musicians,
right.
Scott Hitch and Burt Reeves and Brenton Hund. I mean, they all have like real jobs. Brenton's, you know, with Turner, a music attorney,
but Brenton
but
is
also
actually
a rock star.
And Brenton is actually who I wanted to talk about because he was really interesting. He was a traveling musician. He was in a band. Doing 150 shows a year. You know, they traveled around. I forget the name of the band. It started with a B something. It'll come to me. But, you know, they never were famous, as you point out. But they were quote-unquote successful in that they were booking jobs and they were traveling all over the country and getting paid something. But they were living in the van. You know what I mean? And after however many years, I think he said 8 years, I think, of doing that.
Right.
I guess he had his bachelor's. So that was an after college thing. After 8 years, he was like, all right, enough living in a van. and he went back and got a law degree. And now he's a lawyer in the entertainment field. I mean,
yep.
He's a lawyer at
mm-hmm.
Turner representing, doing their music department legal stuff. And he plays music on the side. But it's an interesting point just because he learned in that 8 years that, yeah, it's a business. And if it's not enough of a business to support you in the lifestyle that you want, then you have to rethink it.
You have to rethink it or do it part-time.
Do it differently.
And differently and find something else that will support you. That's another point as well. When I've talked to high school students and middle school students the last 20 years, I would try to point out to them, you love music or you love the entertainment industry, you can go to college and become a lawyer or an accountant, or you can be a hairdresser, and you can be in the entertainment field.
Absolutely.
A lot of young kids don't realize that you can have a career in the entertainment industry, and it can be just a normal vocation.
That where there's actually jobs available. You don't have to be the only one.
Right.
And, like if you look at American Idol, how many 100,000 people try out and one person gets to be the idol, right? That's not...
And that still doesn't guarantee success.
Absolutely not.
There's plenty of winners who
did nothing
that was
happened.
It. Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
That was the end goal.
Right.
You know?
Done. Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that the revenue will continue to come in for those artists. But Atlanta is an amazing place to be for the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And what another thing that a lot of people don't realize is that one of our biggest exports of the United States and of Georgia is the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And we, you know, because of the tax incentives in film and in music, a lot of films are being filmed here. I'm sure a lot of people know that. You're seeing film crews, you're seeing streets, shut down and for films being made. Well, with that comes lots of jobs, caterers, people have to have a place to stay. That's those apartments.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And same for music.
And you know what else is actually cool about that? You're right, because I think it was interesting. I've always wanted to do something creative, right? I knew that from when I was little, but I didn't really have any idea what my options were, because unlike you, I didn't have any actual talent. I have a little talent, but I didn't have any musical talent. I didn't have something. My parents couldn't get a hold of that and go, oh, she can play the piano or she can sing or, whatever.
An obvious talent.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know what all was available in terms of jobs in the industry. It never occurred to me that I could do that, because in our day, it was sort of like a doctor, a nurse, a school teacher, a musician. Fine. Okay. But you didn't know about all the little jobs that support all these industries. And as an adult, in one of my many midlife crises, which I'm going to say started at age 29, so no one has to know how old I really am. I went, just last year I was working, because I freelance, I do a lot of different things. So I was working, running a teleprompter. And I got to do some really cool things. And I'm telling you, there's probably not a high school student or a college student around who's thinking, I want to go out and run a teleprompter. But it was pretty good money. And I got to go in Turner and be in Turner with the crew and watching them film promos. I got to go to the set of Single Ladies and watch them, roll the teleprompter for them while they were doing promos. I got to work at a UFC fight in the satellite truck, running the teleprompter for the host. I mean, I got to do some really cool things. And I got to see a whole bunch of other support jobs while I was there. So it's like if you open your mind a little bit and you do think of it as a business, look for ways that you can make money. You don't always have to be the star necessarily. Maybe you can be the star, but,
You can be working while you're trying to be the star.
Right.
And a lot of people lose the dream because they're just going for the star and they don't find a way that they can support themselves.
Yeah.
Because when you're working in it, for example, I believe that, Faith Hill worked, for a record company and she was working, in the office, but she had access to the executives, just like so many people who make it in the industry. So a lot of times you might be the accountant or the attorney and you have that demo or that,
hey, you get to know the right people.
You know the right people and you get, and if you can back it up with the talent, and you're responsible and reliable and you show up on time and you show up.
Yeah.
And then you might make it.
Yeah. And I also, because we're all women here and because I'm just in the mood, I have to also say that you have to learn to speak up. And I think we were not taught that as kids. I don't know. I mean, your parents are incredibly adorable and mine are as well, but they didn't teach me growing up to like stand up for, ask for what you want and go out there and, brag about what you can do. That's kind of thought of as a negative, I think, at least in our generation, the way we were raised. It was sort of like, you just do it and your talent will get you somewhere or it won't. But I have learned, and I know Elizabeth can back me up on this, that you got to say what you want. Got to know what you want, first of all, and then you got to say it. And the more you say it, the more likely you are to get it.
Yeah, Peggy, I want to ask you, I mean, you've worked with so many successful people over the years. Like, what's the split in terms of pure raw talent versus having the right training, really putting in the work, knowing the right people, doing all those other right peripheral things versus just, you know, being good naturally?
I would have to say, after teaching for 20 some odd years and coaching, it's 10% talent, 90% work. A lot of times the people who are really talented can sometimes be quite lazy because it comes so quickly. You see that with children too in schoolwork.
Yep.
You know, when it comes so easily, they don't really know how to work. And at some point, to get to the top 10%, you have to be that good and that detailed. And just talent is not enough. I would say 90% work.
I'm so glad you said that. And that was a great question, Elizabeth. Great question.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad you said that because I think on all fronts, you're exactly right. I've seen it with myself. I've seen it with my daughter. I mean, you know, when you are good at something, you do tend to be lazy. And it is a mental thing too, about knowing that you have to do the work, whether it's not even doing the work necessarily to practice your craft, if you are so great at it that you don't have to, but it is, you still have to do the work in creating relationships, presenting yourself a certain way, being out and about and getting to know people. As you said, Faith Hill working there, we know she's uber talented, right? But
right.
If she hadn't been in the right place at the right time, she'd just be some uber talented woman who lived wherever and sang when she was in the shower, right? I mean, you know, she had to get out there. So I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I'll do a disclaimer. That's the story as I've heard it. So hopefully I'm right about Faith.
That's all right. We lie
but,
on the
but,
show.
But it's still, yeah, you said.
No worries.
So, but as far as the work, I try to align myself. One of the keys when I speak to groups about business, one of the things that I feel is one of the most important things is creating a team, a really good team. And I think that you want to create a team of people that are better than you. And over the years, I've worked with just some wonderful people who you would look at as, wow, they're, you know, just come so easy to them. And then you see their work ethic and you see how detailed they are and how much editing they do and how they just work nonstop. I mean, it's amazing the work ethic of the people that are successful in the industry.
Yeah. On that note, I want to get back to your bio a little bit, because I know we, you know, talked a little bit about what you do the last time you were here, but I want to talk specifically about Kellenwald. So executive director now since
yes.
February, is that right?
Yes.
So not so long, a couple months, 6 months almost, I guess. We're getting
Four.
There.
Yeah.
All right. I don't do math.
That's okay.
I'm creative. but how's it going? Tell me about it.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's everything that I thought it would be. It's a wonderful place to be. I'm very excited about Kellenwald. It was a great next step for me.
So for people who don't know much about Kellenwald, I know a lot of people, I'm sure, have driven by it and said, what is that place? So tell us a little bit about what goes on there. What happens there? And a little bit of the history of the place, too.
Kellenwald was built it took 3 years to build, 1917 to 1920, by Charles Howard Candler, who is the son of Asa Candler, and Asa Candler founded Coca-Cola.
Right.
Charles Howard, at one point, was president of Coca-Cola, and he was a trustee for over 30 years at Emory. He's been a big, big part of Metro Atlanta. And as you know, the Candler family is a huge part of Metro Atlanta. And being in Leadership Atlanta, I learned so much more about the Candler family, things that I didn't know about how much Atlanta how much they have helped build Atlanta. Anyways, so he built this mansion at one point, I think it was over 30 acres. Now it's down to 12 acres, and there's multiple buildings there. And it's just beautiful. It is, they call it the hidden gem. I would say, though it's a hidden gem and a lot of people don't know about it, there are a lot of people that do know about Kellenwald.
Yes.
And I've learned that since I've taken the position. People have just congratulated me and told me how much they love Kellenwald, people that I never knew about Kellenwald. Anyway, so the things that we do there We have it's Callenwald Fine Arts Center, which means that we have many, many classes in the fine arts, which we're very excited about. Our summer classes are getting ready to start, and our summer camp. We're going to have thousands of children at Callenwald taking doing summer camp. It's not too late to sign up. I'm going to put a plug.
You're still looking for something to
yes,
do.
Yes, callenwald.org.
Well, it's so funny because that is one of those things, you know, as a parent. I struggled every year. Well, luckily
school just got out last week, right? So
yeah.
There's probably a lot of people.
Well,
that
and here's the
kinda
thing:
kind of creeps up on you.
The good moms, the moms that are really organized and together, they know what their kids are doing for the summer, like by March. But I swear, sometimes like you know, May would roll around and I'd be like, oh no, like what are we going to do? Like she's going to camp for 4 weeks over here, but I have no idea what we're doing for the rest of the summer. So it's good to know that there are still spaces.
It is one of the larger programs in Metro Atlanta. For example, our Easter egg hunt that we just had is one of the largest Easter egg hunts
wow.
in Metro Atlanta. As far as the classes, we teach dance, photography, pottery. We have one of the biggest and best pottery programs around.
Yeah, so good.
And we have one of the largest dance programs around, and one of the finest. We do kinder music. We have, let's see, I said photography, painting, drawing, just jewelry making, and it's for all ages.
Yeah,
from little toddlers all the way to senior citizens. And our outreach program involves four areas of outreach, which are senior wellness, veterans, and veteran wellness, low-income families, and special needs.
Nice.
And the other thing that we do at Callenwald is we have a wonderful rental program. So we have lots of weddings at Callenwald. We have an amazing grand staircase. So you brides-to-be, go on our website, callenwald.org.
I love
you can
it.
Tell I'm a marketer. And look on the website. You can see the beautiful pictures. Callenwald is just so beautiful there. We have an amazing grand staircase and that the brides will walk down, and many of them will as they're getting married. And so I think, and then we have a great reception area in our courtyard. And but we also have a lot of corporate parties and events. We do a lot of community, like Callenwald is owned by DeKalb County. And Callenwald Foundation is a separate 501c3 foundation. That's but we are responsible for the estate and whatnot. So with the rentals, we have a lot of amazing things to rent, including we have a retreat center, which is just gorgeous. We also have a and the retreat center is smaller for maybe groups of 80. We also have films being filmed there. And we're opening it up to the film industry. And so the Film Commission knows that, you know, we are on the list.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you want to film a movie at Callenwald, give us a call.
So now when somebody is, because it is a 501c3 and because there's, you know, the county owns the place and all of that, if you're renting space for your wedding, is that money sort of going back into the 501c3 to then
Absolutely.
Help with the outreach programs?
Absolutely. So your payment is deductible.
What a cool thing.
It is. You know, it is. That's what it's all about. It is a nonprofit, and we are there to serve the community. We also coming up, which is really exciting. I'm going to put a plug in for our event tonight.
Please.
So it's free. Anyone can come. We have an amazing artist in residence. His name is John Dedakis, and he has come here from Washington, D.C. He was the senior editor of Wolf Blitzer's Situation Room.
Cool.
He just retired from CNN and is an author, and he's been teaching our fiction writing classes.
Very cool.
And we are having an event for him tonight, and so anyone is welcome to come, learn about writing, mingle with other people at Callenwald and writers, and there should be wine and cheese, and it's free.
Free is always good.
We would love to have you. We have an art gallery, and the first week of June we will be having a show, and that will be free as well. Come and have wine and cheese again, or wine and goodies. And
there's never too much wine and cheese.
That's what I hear. Yes. and so then we also have our jazz concerts that are coming up, Jazz on the Lawn, and we have 5 different artists that are getting ready to perform. And so check it out on callenwald.org. But Ike Stubblefield, he's a very big name in this town.
Yeah.
And he will be starting off the series on June 14th. Many people know Ted Howe in town. He'll be on July 26th. Of course, I'll just name them off. Serenata will be on June 28th. Scott Glazer, Mojo Dojo, it will be on July 12th. And August 9th will be Madoka and Company. But it all kicks off on June 14th.
And information available, obviously, on the website as
well. On the website, you know, we have Facebook and Twitter. If you just look up Callenwald, it should be easy to find. Twitter is Callenwald Arts at Callenwald.
And do you guys have, like, an email list if people want to just keep hearing about all the
Absolutely.
Programs? You can sign up for, like, a newsletter or something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. We do newsletters, and we have thousands and thousands of people on our newsletter.
Well, it sounds like there's some great things going on. So
it's really very exciting. I feel so, you know, blessed to be in this position and be in the arts. And you said it, to be able to be in the arts, to be in business.
Yeah.
And to be a part of something that is historic.
Yeah.
You know, we are on the register for historic places.
It's so cool.
Yeah. So it's and we collaborate with a lot of the other organizations like Fernbank Botanical and Woodruff. And so we are it's a great place. And if you haven't heard about Callenwald, which a lot of people, like I said, haven't, a lot of people have. My own husband didn't know about Callenwald, so that told me something, and he's been here for over 20 years.
Yeah.
It's something you should seek. And you, being in Little Five Points, is just down the street.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you talk about it being a hidden gem, but it's really not hidden at all. It's so right in the middle of a very central area, easy to get to, a great place right here in town.
I think
that a lot of people don't take advantage of. And you know, you guys were talking earlier about, you know, being a professional artist, but I think it's really important to point out that art is not just for artists, and taking art classes or engaging in creative exercises, it shouldn't just be confined to people who feel like, oh, I'm a creative person or I'm an artist. It's really, you know, for everyone.
Well, it's very healing. And before I even knew about a position being available at Callenwald, we used to go to the John C. Campbell Folk School in North Carolina around the fall time. You know, we'd go to Mercier and pick apples, and then we'd go to this big festival they had every year. And I would just think, oh, this is so wonderful. This is such a refuge for people. I never really thought about Callenwald as being that way. I knew about Christmas at Callenwald, which is a huge thing, that it's our biggest fundraiser, where we actually we shut down the classes and we have tours. We have about 20,000 to 50,000 people that come and tour the mansion, all decorated by designers. So that's all I really thought about Callenwald. But now I've learned, obviously, that there is a whole fine arts program, which I did not know about, which I should have known, being in arts education. And as I took the tour, and as I give tours daily to people coming to Callenwald, I see their faces. They're just so calm and so at peace, because we have a new tagline. It's called "Home is where the art is."
Oh, I love that.
And it's unlike a lot of the other organizations that are arts organizations here in town. We are a home. You, when you walk in, you feel that serenity, and so it brings a peace. So yeah, so if you take pottery and you're not that good at it, you're going to enjoy it.
Well, and I think,
or you might get good at it and not know.
And so, Elizabeth, I think that's a really good point, because I framed the discussion, you know, if you're an artist, shouldn't you know business? And I think your framing of we could do a whole other hour.
If you're a human, shouldn't you know art?
Well, if you're in business,
I'll come back.
You know, if you're a business person, you know, how more well-rounded, how much calmer, how much sort of a better human being you could be if you explored your creative side. You know, if you haven't thought about doing that, you know, it's great that you're a businessman.
Absolutely.
Or whatever, and maybe your hobby is to go out and run so you stay slim or whatever. But if you just also maybe took a painting class, even if you're bad at it, you know?
Well, I play piano and I sing and I I have taught those things for many years, for over 20 years. And I've found that I've had some very, very successful students, as far as successful in the business world, that have come back and said, you know, I have this big company, but I would trade it all if I could get on stage, you know, at Phillips, or I would trade it all if I could tour with the Stones, you know. And it's that doesn't mean they should give that up, but it shows that there's still that desire to do something, and that's almost innate in probably 99% of the population. And so it doesn't mean you should give that up. And there's that serenity that comes from it. And there's something that comes from the arts that you can't get from anything else. And of course, I'm pro arts, so you can hear it coming out now.
It's funny, you know, a good friend of mine, her and her husband are newly empty nesters, and their youngest just went off to college, I think, last year. And she's sort of still floundering around. She's not sure what she wants to do. But she was telling me about her husband, who is exactly sort of what you described, very successful businessman, you know, consultant, does extremely well financially, and the kind of guy that you would just think of that way. Their daughter was a piano student, like excelled at piano, and actually went to college for music. And when she left, he took over her slot with the piano teacher. And
I've seen that.
And he had not played before. I think maybe he played around when he was younger, but he hadn't played in probably 20 years. And he took over her piano slot and is loving it and is serious about it. I mean, he practices. My girlfriend told me he practices, you know, every day or however many times a week or whatever. And he's loving it. So, and he's, you know, this buttoned up, successful consultant guy. I don't think he has any intention, to your point, Elizabeth, of quitting and trying to tour with the Stones. But on the other hand, I think he's getting a lot of joy. And it probably is helping him as a businessman.
Oh, it does. It does. I teach a doctor. He's a surgeon. And he has told me, I've coached him in the past. And he has told me that it's helped his surgeries.
Yeah.
It's just helped him stay alert. And it's using both sides of your brain, at least with piano. Piano, you're reading, if you're reading music, you're reading these little dots.
Yeah.
A lot of dots.
Right. A lot of dots.
which we call notes on the staff. And especially with piano, you're playing with your right hand and your left hand, and they're doing two different things at the same time, and you're reading two different lines at the same time,
right,
on the paper. This causes you to use your left and your right brain at the same time. And then also when you add the artistry and the memorization and all that stuff going along with it and dynamics, that is using your creative side. So it's amazing what piano can do. I've seen it change lives, children, you know, who are having trouble in school. It's a known fact that music really helps them and helps develop the brain and helps with goals and consistency and all those kinds of things.
So now, are you still teaching, even though you're executive directing?
I coach here and there. Yeah, okay. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of time.
Yeah, I would
imagine. Yeah, I have a company called Peggy Johnson Productions and Talent, where I, you know, was doing casting and producing and composing and coaching artists. So there's not a whole lot of time to do that. But, you know, I don't play golf. I don't play tennis. So on my own time, when I'm not at work, I will write music and work on projects and coach artists. Every once in a while, sometimes famous people who are getting ready to go on tour or whatever, who need an emergency session.
I love it. And I you mentioned some famous people right before we got on the air. So that you're working on a project with, did you say Stephen King?
Oh, yes. Well, before I got the job at Callenwald, after I sold Peggy Still School of Music and I had Peggy Johnson Productions and Talent, I was contacted by somebody from John Mellencamp's team, actually Andy York, who's an amazing guitarist. He's his lead guitarist. He contacted me and asked me if I would work on this musical, which is called Ghost Brothers of Darkland County. And because it was going to be premiering at the Alliance and here in Atlanta, they were looking for a local person to work on the show. So they contacted me and asked me if I would be the copyist, which is taking the music from the MP3s and putting them on score. And so I said, sure. So I worked on that project, and then I ended up becoming the vocal coach for the project as well. And that took up quite a bit of my year. I'm still working on the scores. you know, they're getting ready to go on tour, and so they've asked me to kind of polish up some new stuff, and so I'm still doing that on my own time, Callenwald.
Yeah, don't worry, Callenwald. She's got you covered.
But it's yeah, it was a fantastic project. It's written by Stephen King. John Mellencamp did the music. T-Bone Burnett, who was an amazing producer, he was the music producer on this, and he music supervisor, and he musical director. Sorry, that's that was his title. And he he's just as genius as you think he would be. As you know, he did Hunger Games, and he's won Grammys working with Zeppelin and Alison Krauss, and he's worked with just he's quite amazing. But all three of them together are like a power trio, and it was I saw people come to the theater that normally never would come. You can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell they walk in like they've never been to a musical ever. And we sold out almost all the shows. And it was a phenomenal success for the Alliance Theater and for Atlanta, that they chose Atlanta to do this and that it did so well.
Well, the Alliance, if people haven't been, so they should also, first they should go find out all about Callenwald. That goes without saying, callenwald.org.
Oh, but, yeah,
but
absolutely.
The Alliance Theater also, if you haven't been, is like if you think, oh, we only have the Fox here, you have to go see a show at the Alliance Theater. It is a gorgeous theater, and every production I've ever seen there is phenomenal. So it is. That's almost another hidden gem, I think. You know, you drive by that complex, and you have no idea what all is going on in there.
The High, the Alliance, you know, the ASO. I mean, it's all so amazing what Robert Woodruff's vision was. You know, just to it's a great thing.
Yeah.
And we say support it. Please support it. But you will get supported as well. You will gain something that you maybe didn't realize was so wonderful or that you were missing.
Absolutely. Well, it's so important. I mean, we kicked off the show talking about the high-tech mecca Atlanta is, but equally as important is the thriving arts community here and the fact that people do invest in it and support it and continue to build that as the culture of our city.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, the ASO, the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, has won many, many Grammys. They don't realize that the Alliance Theater is a regional Tony Award-winning theater. And it's very fine. You know, Susan Booth has done an amazing job, and Max Leventhal of guiding the Alliance Theater. And it's just all cutting edge and yet still so classic.
Yeah, I think it is a really, I'm glad we had you here just in general, of course, because you're lovely, but also just because I like to kind of spotlight the arts here. We do talk a lot about technology here, and we do talk a lot about, you know, real estate and building and what's happening, you know, in terms of the economy, but the arts are a huge part of all of that. It is so also integrated.
A strong city has to have the arts.
Absolutely.
If you don't have a strong arts program, you're not considered one of the strong cities.
It is so funny too, because
it doesn't just take a Ferris wheel.
No.
Ferris wheel is cool, but come support the arts.
But come support the arts. That's right.
Yes.
It is funny because I do think that even people who don't take advantage of it, when you're thinking about relocating, whether you're going to take advantage of it or not, you want to know that culture is there. You should take advantage of it. And I want to encourage, you know, one of the other stories I read, and we're going to wrap it up here, but one of the other stories I read was that Alpharetta is something like one of the fastest growing cities in the country now. I don't remember where it fell in the rankings, but it's in very high up there. And Alpharetta is a bit of a schlep, to, you know, use one of my regular terms, to get into the city to partake in some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Do it. Do it, people. Drive down to the Northridge MARTA station, hop on the MARTA, you know, come into town, plan ahead, whatever you have to do, because there are so many great things down here.
You know, I had one of my stores was in Alpharetta, and I started out in Roswell, actually, is where I began Peggy Still School of Music, and then I moved it to Alpharetta, and it was really an economy thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't find a place, and it turned out to be great, because Alpharetta turned out to be booming. And but I did notice that a lot of the people in the burbs don't take advantage. They're building their communities in their burbs, and they don't take advantage of of the city.
Yeah.
So take the MARTA. Come into town. It's not that far, especially on a weekend. Take a tour of Callenwald. You know, you can come anytime and take a tour. And of the Woodruff Arts Center.
It is really funny. I think you can. People do feel like it's far, but once you get in your car and go, it's really not that bad. So do it. Do it, everybody. Go to Callenwald. Go see Peggy. She'll give you a tour.
Absolutely.
She'll make you feel serene.
Absolutely. And come, again, we're having that free event tonight with John Dudakis, CNN extraordinaire retiree. And also we are having our jazz concerts on the lawn, which are amazing, that are for this summer.
Starting soon. All right. Callenwald.org. Peggy Steele Johnson, thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We're wrapping it up. Elizabeth has, I think, one more week with us. Very sad. We're going to have to have a big celebration next week in your honor.
Ha ha.
Not ha ha. I'm going to invite all you regulars in just to roast you, I think, next week. But we want to, of course, always thank our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. Learn more about World Trade Center Atlanta by visiting their website, WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.